I think we're going to do some very interesting broad-scale thinking today. Someone once talked about the luxury of time to think. And, you know, I had this advisor, and every time he'd pull together a symposium or a meeting, he'd start with, all right, we turn off our cell phones and don't check your email and just enjoy the luxury of time to think over the past 2 days. In which case, by the middle of the first day, you're sitting there going, I wonder what email I'm getting. I wonder who's calling me. So I invite you to time to think broad thoughts, but understand the reality. And in fact, that's a theme I think you're going to hear today, is you're going to hear broad thoughts and you're going to hear reality. And so Eli and I were talking with Elliot and the folks, we came up with the library's conversation. And I'm going to walk you through that in a really specific way, but I want you to think in a broad sense, the organizations that we work in and the organizations we create are a product of our own efforts, of our own thoughts, of our own negotiations, of our own conversations. And I want you to think about that because that is an empowering thought where you don't feel like you're necessarily a slave to a given operation. And at the same time, it doesn't let you off the hook. At one point, I was at a speech and I said, you know, you realize, of course, that the library is you. That the people sitting in this room, libraries, paraprofessional, maintenance, doesn't matter, security, you're the library. And so what do we want to be together? Now, this is an interesting book. You've probably been hearing about it everywhere, The World Without Us. And I've been reading through it. And it's based on this really interesting premise. And the premise is, what if tomorrow all the people on Earth disappeared? He doesn't go into why. It's not a science fiction novel. But just pretend for a moment everyone's gone. Right? Raptured up to God, aliens take us to a zoo across the environment, whatever it is. And he says, all right, so what happened? You know, this explodes. You know, I was driving by the refineries on the way in from the airport thinking, yeah, big fireball. Isn't there something just Blade Runner-esque when you're driving by these stacks at night which is blowing flame into the air? Yeah, that's a manly town. But I want you to think about for a minute just the library, right? We're just going to pick on you. Everyone else gets to be fine, but you guys disappear, right? Everyone in this room disappears. What do we have left? Is what we have left, well, besides a mess, because once security's gone, yeah. But assume we have, you know, citizens who behave well. What do we have left? Buildings and books. Is that a library? Good. It's an interactive crowd. I agree. I think it's not. In fact, Barbara Quint once talked about the idea of the library at night, once the doors are closed, as a coral reef without fish. Right? It's there. It's kind of pretty. It's got this architectural familiarity, but it's not alive, and it's not happening. It's not changing. And so if we look at a library and if we think about a library, we need to think about something other than, well, we've got resources. And it's really interesting when we sort of define what we do, and what's worse is when other people define us, oftentimes they don't get that. Well, if you disappear tomorrow, it's a library. I was walking through my church yesterday, and I noticed there's this nice little room, and it's the so-and-so library. And what is it? It's a closet with books, right? This, to me, does not count. This is not, right? We're talking with the Department of Transportation, and they're saying, well, they're closing libraries everywhere. And I said, what does that mean? It's like they're locking the doors. I mean, that doesn't count. What we have is a library with professionals and paraprofessionals of all types and all functions is we have a living, working organization that's here to improve the community. Right? So that's what we want to talk about. I want to just start with that premise that a library is not the things around us. A library is not the walls around us. A library is you. No matter what work you do, when you walk into this building, you contribute to making this organization. And what do you want that library to look like, and how does it reflect upon you? So I'm going to talk a little bit about participatory spaces. This is a fresco. There's the door. And I just have to get my disclaimers out early. I'm an academic. And so what that normally means is, yeah, we got our degree, go away. But I don't know if anyone knows the origin, since you're an interactive crowd, does anyone know the origin of the word academics? What's that?
The Greek Academy.
And what was the Greek Academy?
Bunch of rich Greeks sitting around thinking.
But worse than that, it was a gym. I mean, it was like if all the Greeks, you know, with their togas went to the Y and hung out in the steam room. That's the academy, right? I mean, when I look at the academy, what the academy is, it's a bunch of smart people playing. I mean, it's constructive play, we hope. But that's what I think is interesting. And one of the things that I reflect back on is when someone says, you're just an academic, and I say, yes, I'm a playful person with a PhD, is how can we incorporate some of the ideals of that into every organization? In other words, how can we have the academy here in the Free Library of Philadelphia so that we have a chance to play and explore and think? And so this is only a minimal opportunity, but let's go from there. What started all of this and these conversations that we had is a project we did with the American Library Association on participatory librarianship, because we like lots of little syllables. We were originally going to call it conversational librarians, but everyone thought that that was people sitting by the fire going, so how's it to be a librarian? Oh, good. How's it with you? And this is based on a really, really simple premise at the top, that knowledge is created through conversation. This is posited, if you care about it, this is where the academic comes out, by a fellow by the name of Gordon Pask, who is a cybernetician in England. He's dead now. Apparently, he lived his life with lots of pharmaceuticals. But he had a question. He wanted to figure out how he could make machines think. And in order to do that, he had to figure out how people thought. And what he came through with a lot of research and a lot of thinking was people learn through conversation. Now, this isn't radically different. Going back to the wise Greeks in their togas doing, you know, somersaults. The Socratic method, people having dialogue, people having discussion. And if you think about it today, it's how you sort of figure stuff out. When we looked in schools and teachers, you ask, what's the number one source of information for a teacher? The teacher in the next room. You know? And they did this great study of academics publishing, and they looked at all the citations, and they found out that 80% of the citations in academic papers come from the professor's office. Another 5% come from anything on the floor. And then as it gets to the library where they actually have to get up to the chair and go to it, it declines radically, right? But you probably do it. You talk to your neighbor. You talk to your friend. If you're on the reference desk and you get a hard question, you ask how it's going, right? All of these are conversations. Sometimes these conversations are internal. We talk to ourselves, and sometimes people get really worried about us, but this is okay. It's called metacognition or critical thinking if we're into instruction, and children are taught this in schools, the idea of thinking about how they think. Right? So this idea is simple, but when you apply it to libraries, interesting things happen. If knowledge is created through conversation, and libraries are knowledge organizations, libraries are in the conversation business. Now, this is something we're probably not used to thinking about. We weren't trained as conversationalists. Right? What happens is that books, videos, web pages, these are just artifacts. They're the byproduct of knowledge. Now, they're useful. I don't want to say let's get rid of all the books. We've been there. But the utility comes from the fact that there was a good conversation that led to them. Right? But it also means that if we're in the artifact business, we're not in the knowledge business. I think we like to be in the knowledge business. I think that makes sense for us. So as we walk through these rooms, as we walk out of these doors, and we look around us, this is an edifice. These are artifacts. These are byproducts. What we really care about is what's happening in rooms like this, right? When the Nobel laureates show up. I mean, this is the sort of knowledge engine. When people come into your branch and they sit in groups and talk, that's the business you're in. When they go get a book and you enhance the conversation, that's great. But it's that conversation that ultimately is a lot of what we're here for. So libraries, both online and offline, need to be thinking about how do we facilitate conversations, right? If you think back to a life that you've affected, now I have yet to meet someone working in a library who doesn't have the story. And the story is always that warm, rosy, you know, after school movie moment, you know, where it's like, well, this person came in to me, they were desperate, and I did this, and their life was better. And I don't care if that's someone on the reference desk or someone in the front door asking directions, or it doesn't matter. But you touched someone's life and you improved someone's life. And it happened because you talked to that person, because there was an interaction back and forth. Now, that might have involved resources, it might have involved books, it might have involved maps, but the origin of that, the power of that, came through this conversation. This fact that people, when they come into our library, when they want to learn, They want to have a conversation. Sometimes it's with you, sometimes it's with their friends, sometimes it's with themselves. Leads to a pressure to participate. They want to actively construct their knowledge. Now, I want to just take a second here that people might feel a little awkward with this idea of learning. I'm against it, personally. But libraries aren't in the learning business. We're libraries. We're in the service industry. Schools are in the learning business. Universities, libraries aren't learning organizations. Well, aside from me thinking that's generally wrong, we also have a historical tradition that says that that's wrong. When Melville Dewey wanted to create public libraries as equal partners to the public education system, we know for a fact that many people we have coming to our libraries are because they want to learn and they found failure in the other mechanisms of education. So we are in the learning business. All right? And I'm not asking us to go into formal pedagogy, and I'm not asking you to wear mortar boards and robes, though I'm all for that too. But people want to be active constructors of their knowledge. So when they walk into your building, they're looking to learn, and they want to be part of that process. Right? We've all seen, I teach reference, and we've all seen the reference interview gone bad. Right? This is the sign of a bad reference interview. The patron is headed that way, and the librarian's chasing them with a book. No, really, you need this one, and this one, and this one, and this one. Right? It's the bucket of knowledge business. We'll just pry open their head, dump in a couple of books, and they'll be smart again. Right? People want to be active constructors of the knowledge. They want to control that process. And they want tools that facilitate that conversation and participation. So they walk into an organization. They want to learn. They want to construct their world. What do they find? Well, traditionally, if they have a question, they get up before an information desk. The information desk is about this high. And if it's about this high, usually we give the librarian a step. So they're about this high. The patron, may I help you?
Well.
Right? And then in the reference interview, Sarah Weissman's classic line is, we put them on the rack until they tell us the truth. Right? So I walk in and I have a question, right? So I walk up to the reference desk. Or frankly, and everyone who's worked security, maintenance, if you're in the building, you're a librarian, right? So it really doesn't matter. And frankly, I'm dressed in black, so that's kind of a uniform, so they'll come to me. And they'll say, I'm interested in nutrition books. Nutrition books. No, you're not. Yeah, nutrition books. What kind of nutrition books? Well, ones that are about what I should and shouldn't eat. Nutrition books. Why do you want this information? I don't know. I mean, the truth is I'm fat and I'm looking for a good diet, but I'm not going to tell you that. Right? So we want to be active constructors of the knowledge. We want to be in an environment where we feel like a partner and not a pawn. And I want to show you what the number one interface that we give users, the face that we put on this active constructors of knowledge. Now, I'm not going to pick on Philadelphia, but if anything, looks familiar. I was on the board of Onondaga County Public Library, so I'm allowed to pick on myself. So here we go. Someone wants some information. They come on the web. They get here. They come in person. We sit them in front of this. Now, I actually like Philadelphia in that really you have an open screen with one little box that says go. I think that's a good thing. But this is not unusual. All right. Where do I go? Well, clearly, I want to go to the place where I order sweaters for Christmas. Okay, that's not what I expected to happen. No sweaters. Search the catalog or search the digital catalog. How many people does the Philadelphia Free Library system, do you guys have any digital collections, scan things? Are they available in the regular catalog? Good for you. Do you have audiobooks? Is it who provides them? Overdrive. Love Overdrive. Integrated in the system? Nah, not quite yet. So now I have to make a choice. Do I want digital stuff or, once again, digital sweaters, non-digital sweaters? I happen to know I'm going to go in the catalog. And I'm, boom, all right. I have a box. I can type. And I'm going to search for Harry Potter because everyone does. Not our patrons. They know where to get them. They bought them already. All librarians do. And here it is. The pinnacle of library science over the past 100 years. It's pretty. We have graphics. That's cool. And the number one resource, the magic of Harry Potter. The number two resource, Lego Creator. Before you feel smug, I did this in Philadelphia. Number one resource, video cassette. Right? So that's, but it was Harry Potter. You gotta give, you guys, all right. A lot of these systems put in last in, first out. That's a great way to organize information. Okay. So I go to the second page. Yeah, yep, yeah. Oh, there it is. This is what I want. I want Sorcerer's Stone. So I click on that. And here we go. This wonderful, warm and fuzzy feeling around Harry Potter. But I know that it is, in fact, a book that looks a lot like a dictionary. If I scroll down, I know where it is. All right. I want you to think about this for a second. And I want you to compare it to another experience. I'm not going to make you raise your hands. Theoretically speaking, has anyone actually gone to Amazon to find the book first and then gone to the library catalog to see if you have it? Why is that? Because you're all traitors. No. I have a theory, right? So I come to Amazon, and by the way, what's funny is if I go to Amazon and I type in Harry Potter, and when I did this query, this book wasn't even published yet, so they're way ahead of time. I think if we can invent some time-shifting book delivery service, we'll be in well-suited. I scroll down on that page, I find the Sorcerer's Stone, and up comes this information. Now, before I go too far, how many times have you been in a meeting where you've been talking about the website, the interface, or you've been arguing with it over coffee or something, and you've always said, it needs to be more like Amazon, or it needs to be better, or it needs to be more like an enter Google. We need to be more like that. Right? And almost always that conversation will quickly devolve into it needs to be simpler and easier. Right? We've got to make it simpler and easier. And that almost always turns into shorter and more precise. I want to show you something. No. That is the entire record from the Onondaga County Public Library. So I took, yes, if you can read on the third line, no. I took a screenshot of the entire screen. This is the entire record. This is OCLC WorldCat. That's Onondaga County Public Library. This is the National Library of Australia. Guess where I made the slide? Here's the Library of Congress. Everyone ready for Amazon? Simpler, shorter. No. Why is it that something like this, which we would all look at and say, this is an overwhelming amount of information, people can't process this, this is horrible, is actually what we prefer sometimes, most of the time. All right, all the time. Well, let's look at what's on that. Everyone says, oh, but it's full of commercial crap. That's the commercial branding information at the top. That says Amazon. That is the sales information, which is really the metadata, the ISBN number, the cost, that kind of thing. That is recommended. If you like this, you'll like this other thing. These are quality reviews, book reviews, New York Times reviews. Right? Here's some more bibliographic data. And if, by the way, you add up that orange and that blue, light blue, you'll get roughly that. So what's the rest of this crap? Recommendations based on purchases, open reviews by users of Amazon, pathfinders. Remember when we used to do pathfinders? Discussion tools, wikis, tagging. And then way at the bottom, other marketing information. What is the difference between this and that? This is focused around conversation. This is when someone asks their buddy, or when someone asks their friend, or when someone is trying, this is how that system is built. This is a discovery tool. This is a searching tool. This is an inventory system. Now, an inventory system, for those of you who know, an inventory system is when you go shopping for shoes, and you go, I like this one. Do you have it in a size 8? And the salesperson gets up, walks away from you, behind a desk, hides, and says, yes, we do, or we have it in our whatever store, right? Because they don't want you to see that god-awful system. We put it front and center, right? You need an inventory system. You need to know where it is. You need to know how to get that thing. You need to know if it's checked in, but that's not necessarily what the patron needs when they're actually trying to find the data. You could add a simple little button saying, do you have it? And they can go and say, yeah, we do, or could check for it, that kind of stuff. But that's, in fact, when you look at this one, and when you look at this one, the majority of that page is actually inventory data. Right? So it's not a very conversational system. The other problem we have is this is not actually remarkably different than that OCPL thing where it had a bunch of lines. The library field, Elliot mentioned that the rapid change that we have. In the information industry, he absolutely. The delta of delta, the changing pace of change, is up there. And what that's led to is that, which is every time we see something, we throw a new system at it. Oh, we need to digitize things. We'll develop the digital catalog. Oh, we need audiobooks. We'll link to the audio thing. Oh, we need this. Oh, we need that. And so what we end up with is a set of disconnected, stacked systems that aren't well integrated. So we have our use data, circulation. Maybe we have some recommender systems. We have our bibliographic catalog. We have our databases. People love our databases, and they clearly understand the difference between the catalog and databases. We have external feeds. We have digital collections. We have virtual reference, traditional reference. Maybe we have a bar. All right, Dave's going to tell us we need a wiki. No problem. We'll just shrink that and add another one. And let's throw a blog on top of that. Hey, this is fun, right? And we're going to pile this up, and like Atlas holding up the sky, we will be crushed. Like the little ants that we are. But we already see that that people know this is a problem, and so we see work, good work going on, things like federated searching. So you can put that one search box up, but it can search across your databases. Yay. What's the difference between institutional repository, digital collection? Nothing. This is our digital stuff. This is our knowledge base. We have our hosted services. And this is going to eventually merge into this. We have our information and community-generated information, and we have bibliographic data that we license and lease. But this forms a trajectory. This is going somewhere. And where it's going is to a truly participatory system where when you go to that system and you put it, right, Philadelphia, is everyone reads the same book? Yes? You doing it this year? What's our book? Rumor. Hasn't been announced yet. All right.
Last year, this past year was Carlos Ayers.
Waiting for Snow and see, that's far too intellectual. Let's say Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So we're reading Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and you walk in, and someone comes up to the system, and it says, I'm interested in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, right? Well, they go to the catalog, they're going to find out whether it's in or out. Maybe on our webpage, we announce that there's a reading group about it. Maybe we have a bibliography of if you like this, we do a Pathfinder. Well, that's also somewhere else on the webpage, right? Why not when you walk in and you type Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, it says, here's the book. By the way, there's a reading group next Wednesday. By the way, people in Philadelphia have been blogging about the book. Here's some reference to their RSS feed. Here's a read. Give it to them. Integrate it. And yes, the idea that information will go in and out. And by the way, I've done a drawing of Marvin. Upload it. Yes, upload it. Let our patrons into that system. Right now, the library has, and those of you who are not librarians can attest to this, the library has a very naive view of identity management. Librarian, not librarian. Right? Now, I'm not going to ask you to self-identify. Paraprofessionals, you ever feel like you're left out of the club? Do you ever feel like maybe there's a meeting that you weren't invited to because you didn't get the MLS? Or maintenance staff? Now, Elliot and Joe, I mean, when we gave this presentation, they're like, this is for the whole staff. So I'm actually really impressed, the idea that we're having staff development with everyone here. I think that's good, right? But the idea that, what about our patrons? How about letting them enter the information? How about letting the community that you're a part of be part of these systems? I'm going to skip this. It's very interesting. This is a reserve system that was developed. I'll show you. This is a reserve system that was developed at Syracuse University. You go in, you've got readings, you click on Find a Reserve. You tell it what your instructor and director is, and it spits out at you a bunch of your readings. All right? Now, this led to problems in the academic environment. A lot of database publishers said, you're violating copyright, you can't do this, make it better. And so their grand fix to it was to put it through Blackboard, where they had to log in and then do exactly the same thing. But originally they came to us and said, how can this be more interesting? Well, the first thing we said is, we pay you a lot of money to know who I am and what classes I'm taking, so when I come in, it just knows. And it says, okay, we'll have here are your articles you need, here are your books, here are your classes, here are some feeds. It's definitely, you know, it's Web 2.0, so we need my feeds, right? And here's the information from Amazon, and oh, we stole this from library thing, so we want people, to, oh, it's got to have a tag cloud, right? This was our first idea of how to reinvent the system. If you've heard of Web 2.0 or Library 2.0, this thing reeks of Library 2.0, right? It's got all the right functions. But then we looked at it and we said, something's wrong here. What's the difference between an article and a book? And how are they related to my classes? And what do you mean friends? What do friends do with my books? Right? And so we went back and we rethought this kind of system because this system is artifact-based. This is about the stuff, not about the people. This is about the things that we can deliver, not about the conversations that they're going to be used within. You see the difference? Right? This is all about that PDF file. Right? It's got user stuff with it, but the user stuff is only there to enhance that PDF file. I don't know about you. I don't like being in the business of enhancing PDF files. I like to enhance people. And maybe I should have been a plastic surgeon. So we went back and we thought, no, all right, this is what it should look like. Right? My conversations. Now, maybe that conversation's a class. Maybe it's my next great novel. Right? This is an academic example, but let's take a community example. My next novel, my tax rebate, my community meeting, my youth group, my this, my rules for Little League baseball. What are these conversations? I have a 7-year-old who's in fall ball. I had no idea. Do you know how you win when you're a 7-year-old in Little League? You steal home. No one actually hits the ball. If you get on first, you're in scoring position. Not unlike a lot of baseball teams, we know. But I don't know the Phillies. I'm not here to play that game. Here's my only sports joke. Ready? I come from Syracuse University. We used to think Temple was a safe bet when we played them with football. Okay. All right. Now, God, we're pathetic. All right. But the idea is that you have this item, but it's a syllabus, right? So when someone gives you a Pathfinder, this is like, if I go into the Philadelphia website, you have a great set of links. Great set of links, right? Tracts of land. One Monty Python fan. Okay. And it says, you know, you're interested in tax, you're interested in recreation, whatever, and you've got these lists. Right? Where do those lists come from? What do those lists mean? How are they related? If you're going to do tax information, you have a link. Is the link to the IRS the same thing as a link to a tax preparer? Is the same thing as a link to a journal article? Is the same? No. They have radically different. Why are these links here? What's the relationship of one link to another? You're missing the connective tissue in here. This is the connective tissue. I have a syllabus. That syllabus has a project where I got a photograph. That photograph led me to having a conversation with the author. So that in a year when I come back to this, I know what the relationship of all those artifacts are. And those artifacts are only there because they're enhancing a conversation. And then when you get to an item and you know why you're there, then all this stuff makes sense. But only when I know where I am in that conversation. It's like tagging. Eli, are you going to talk about some tagging? Tagging is a good news, bad news thing. Tagging is not a panacea. Here's the problem with tagging. It's also the benefit. Tagging is great for getting someone's initial impression of a thing at a given point in time. You ask someone a year later to look at the tags they assigned to that, and they may or may not know why they assigned those tags. Right? So we have to be aware of how these things fit together. All right. Yeah. Add your own nodes. Migration and conversation. Okay. The old model of librarianship is that the library was a separate from the organization it sought to serve. Where am I? I am just about out of time. Okay. It's a separate process and collection from the community's core business. Think about it. Right now, this community, Philadelphia or your local suburbs or whatever, are conducting business. How integral are you to that business? You're part of a conversation where economic development, violence control, what our school system should be teaching in literacy, what we should be doing for adult education. How involved are you that, or are you waiting for the question? The emphasis is on external documents. This is a very, I blame Dewey for a lot of things. Right? Dewey said what we're going to do is literacy is a primary function of a library. What he meant was the right literacy is a primary function of the library. The idea of bringing literacy to the masses was not to serve the masses so much as to wash the masses, to bring them up to what they felt was the appropriate societal view. It's a very paternalistic view. It's a pull service. We wait for the problem. So what are we talking about moving towards? Yeah, we wait for a question, we send them an answer. And then we throw away the data. Even better. The new model is as library as an active and engaged agent of the community. We are part of the community directly. The community gives us our marching orders, and we discuss them with the community, and we move out. Not just for a tax proposition, not just for a levy, not just for a building grant, but we talk with them every single minute of every single day to see what that community needs and how we can be part of it. We become a repository for that community. When you look at your libraries, does that branch look like your community? Or does that branch look like everything your community is not? Think about that. When you buy a book, is it because it reflects a community need, or is it because there's an absence in the community you're trying to fill? Because if you keep trying to fill a bunch of absences, what you end up with is this collection around the periphery of what the community needs. The emphasis is on synthesis. The library becomes publisher of community. Imagine right now we do our websites so that the citizens of Philadelphia will come to them and be served. I think that's great. Does anyone else come to the website? Is there a reason for someone from Syracuse, New York to come to that website to see what the community is doing or to make it available? Some things we're talking about is if you have musicians in your community, can you provide a podcast so that they can be delivered out in a steady IP address? If you have authors that are writing journals and papers in their great American novel and they can't get a publisher, can you become the publisher? So now your collections look like the community and not, whether you like it or not, and not what someone views the community should be doing. The library as a force of progress in the community. I am to blame for this. In LIS education, we teach people to be simply reactive and unbiased. It's garbage. You cannot be unbiased. You have to have a bias. I prefer it be the community's bias. When someone comes in and asks you a question and you lead them to a book, you have a bias. When someone comes in and asks them a question, you lead them to a web page, you have a bias. Right? Oh, but we present most of them. Which one do you do first? You can't get away from it. And this idea that somehow we're neutral forces is rubbish. We live in this community. We care about this community. We want to stand up and say, Philadelphia is better because we were here, because we did something. So our mission is to facilitate the knowledge creation of the community through these conversations. Not to collect a bunch of stuff. Not to archive, collect, do services, but facilitate communications. Facilitate these communications. What do I mean by facilitate? We provide access to these communications. So we provide meeting rooms. How many people have meeting rooms in their library branch like this? Right? You lend them out to the to the community, right? Why? That's not about books. Because we know we're a community center as well. We provide sufficient bandwidth for information. You guys provide truly free wireless access. You are providing access. You are facilitating conversations. We have a collection of unique resources that only exist in this environment, and we provision for long-term storage. Historical societies are great about collecting a bunch of stuff about the history of the community until it rains and the roof falls in and it gets destroyed. Where are you guys?
There?
Yes. We provide knowledge, training, education, mentoring, standing dissemination of information, pathfinder synthesis. All right, I have access to this community. I can get there, but I have no idea what they're talking about. I need to know how to use the computer. I need to know how to do this. I need to know a language skill. We provide a safe, free, and open access environment for them to do that. Now, that can mean for the kids, they're not going to be beat up. They're not going to be let off. But it can mean for the adults, they can have the conversation with knowing no one's going to be sitting behind their shoulder and watching it. That's also a form of safety. And we provide motivation. Once again, librarian. Not very motivating. Why not, as you add things to the website and you get your name shown on it? Right? Eli's going to talk about, you can talk about the tournament system, right? They get recognition for what they're doing. Right? So These are conversational approaches. It's not that we're doing something radically different. It's that we're putting the conversation first and the artifact second. The traditional view of the library is we're a collection of collections. Right? We've got our databases and our repositories and our digital library and our catalog, and people come in and they learn our system. The conversation is one way. You give us a little question and we'll dump stuff on you and we hope you can figure it out. That's okay. We'll offer bibliographic instruction. Instead, think of it as the library is a collection of users. The users have their collections. Some of those may be pulled up from your web resources and library assets. Some of them may be their own images, their own stories, their own books. If you have an anime collection, you have a group of people who are in anime, can you give them a shelf and say, here, this is your shelf. Organize your materials here. We'll make sure they're locked up. And you go, oh, God, we have to accession them, we have to catalog. No, let them worry about it. Provide the community the space. Provide a community collection space, right? So when we talk about how to take some of these ideas we're looking at the catalog and make them in physical spaces, those meeting rooms you provide, what about the people who can't make the meeting? Can you web video conference them out? And in terms of capturing the conversation, can you record them, put them on your servers, so that next year when someone has the exact same meeting and you're sitting there going, this is the exact same meeting, you can just say, wait, I'll just stream it so we don't have to all get up and talk again, right? Can we allow community groups to build and maintain their own collections? In terms of knowledge, how about a standing curriculum that offers certification? Right? We partner with education organizations and citizen groups and community colleges to offer those classes here. In terms of providing a safe environment, a daycare center with building-wide monitoring, monitoring of public events. In terms of motivation, create innovation spaces and incubators for entrepreneurs. Right? When you're starting a small business, we can give them materials, but sometimes they just need to get out of the house. Time to think about these things. Create tiers of volunteers and paraprofessionals. Create branded content for dissemination. Publish the community. Capture these conversations while respecting privacy. What are the implications for you folks? Well, you guys are the facilitators of the conversation. And when I say you, library, paraprofessional, maintenance, security, doesn't matter. You guys are in the job. You're the library. Don't sit behind a desk. Roam, including outside of the buildings. If you're trying to serve the theater community, be in the theater community. Be in the theater districts. Hire a librarian, hire a paraprofessional, hire someone who doesn't actually have an office. Yeah, send them out. Staff are tool builders, developing websites and pathfinders and living documents. If you don't like the catalog, build your own. Staff are constantly learning. The curriculum that we develop for ourselves, we should deliver to the community and vice versa. And here's my last message. I've gone to way too many conferences in my life that started with, when Google puts us out of business, right? And the dire, and you know, when Google, Google exists. We exist. We're still here. No more fear and loathing. We are not going to have a conversation about, is the library relevant? It is. We are not going to have a conversation about, does the library impact the community? It does. We are not going to have conversations about how Google is going to put us out of business. It won't. The point is that we are still here, and we have a valuable role. In fact, with Google, give Google the crap we don't want to do. I teach reference, and reference librarians go, oh, yeah. I say, Google, don't go. You know, we're the best search engines. A librarian's the best search engine. No, you're not. I'm sorry to tell you this. A librarian is not the best search engine. Google is much better at giving 300,000 records of crap in 10 milliseconds. I don't think that's the business you want to be in. Right? You're not the best search engines. You're the best knowledge guides. You're the best facilitators of information. Google can't sit there and say, what do you want this for? How can this be more useful? Right? Google can say, I got a keyword, I got a document, good luck. Right? So let Google do it. Let Google do it. We're going to do our stuff. Right? So ultimately, here's my final message, and then, which is this. Change. It's inevitable. My favorite quote, change is like heaven. Everyone loves the idea, but no one wants to go first. It's time to go first. There's an obligation of leadership. I believe that leadership is a service to the organization, and there's an obligation upon us to take on those reins. It is much easier to take a task and run with it than to say, wait a minute, can we do this better? Can we innovate? And I know in any organization of any size, there will be walls. They will be placed right in front of you, and your head will go in them continually when you try and do this. Right? Everyone who's a supervisor, try not to do that. Break down when you can. But ultimately, it's an obligation on our part to do it. If you want a library to be here next year, make sure the library is here. It's not a passive thing. Innovate. Not innovate just in technology. That's certainly the emphasis I've had so far. But innovate in practice, in operations. If you're looking at that big front desk when people walk in, is there a better way to do that? Is there a better way to provide after-hours access? Is there? Innovate. Innovate in all aspects. It will make your life so much more enjoyable than simply sitting back and going, this is stupid, right? Participate. The library is a group of people. The library is in this room. This room is the engine of this organization right now. It's not the stacks. It's not the catalog. It's not the servers. It's this room. You are the engine of innovation. You have an obligation to lead. You are exciting times. These are exciting times with no fear and loathing. How can we move forward and make this library an incredible, useful agent of the community, a facilitator of conversations? Thank you for your time. I think I left time. Okay, good. Yeah. We have some time for questions.
Yeah, so we do have microphones because we want to make sure everybody hears. This is better that way, but let's start over here. And the microphone, they're on corner, long cords.
They're wireless.
They're wireless, they're cordless.
They're cordless.
High tech.
We can move back as far as you want tonight. So, why don't you just come on up to the microphone?
I'm pretty loud. I think I'll be okay.
I can hear him.
Okay. Theme participation with this conversation. I'm interested. Do you know what the status of librarians are as far as like professionalism in state Pennsylvania? But as far as I know, they are not a professional career.
Okay.
So in other words, we can't be paraprofessionals. As far as I know, we all just work as civil servants.
Fair enough.
You mean throughout the state? I mean, you are, if you're a librarian, I'm not sure what you mean by professional. You are certified by the state as a librarian.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it's not listed under the professions that, like, for instance, a plumber. Okay. You can look at, like, the ALA, right, and this has been a debate that's been going on for a long time. But the fact of the matter is that a librarian doesn't have the kind of relationship with the public that, for instance, a plumber would have. In other words, you would have a reasonable expectation when you get a plumber in the house that they would flood the place. You can't really have that expectation with a librarian. In other words, if you get bad advice or something, well, you know, that's pretty much on you. If you were to go to court, you see, there's a certain standard that has to be met, is that if you're being sued and stuff, you have to be able to convince the court that you're doing things at a standard that the rest of your profession has. This doesn't exist with librarians, and therefore they're not in that list.
So, hey, good for us. We can screw up and not be held accountable. No. Yeah. Don't clap at that. Librarians are it's an interesting question. And it's the same thing that this is for me, I can't deal with the legal issue, but I can deal with the idea of the relationship with the public. Because as I said, when public walks into a library, anyone who's standing behind any sort of piece of furniture is a librarian to them, right? there is this really amazing aura that we have to work with, and we should not screw up. Which is, isn't it amazing that people will come to a library, an organization, ask the most intimate questions, sometimes that we don't want to hear, and require less identity information of us than they would of a used car salesman. We have this reputation of credibility. We have a reputation of being unbiased. We have a reputation of being an honest information broker. And it is a reputation that we must actively work to preserve. And once again, that's why it's important that it's at all levels and at all positions within a library. Every one of us is ultimately responsible for our ongoing credibility, our ongoing reputation of service. And so we need to make sure, and our websites are the same way. And so what we're finding now, this pressure to participate, is people come to our websites and they say, on Flickr I can upload my images, on YouTube I can upload my videos, on Google I can put in my comments, and my library doesn't want to hear from me. Right? So an expectation has been built up in the virtual environment that we must understand and be part of. In a physical environment, we have it, and we need to preserve it and keep it. And so this idea of how can we best serve, someone was talking about value. How can we quantify the value of librarians? The answer is don't ask librarians to do it, right? Well, we do this and we do that, we do this. What does the public think about this, and do they know about what we're doing? So how can we preserve credibility? How can we preserve a reputation with our community? And my answer back to you is ultimately to be seen as an honest broker, but engaged in the conversations they want. Because there's a great idea, a great quote about partnerships. A true partnership is one where everyone has skin on the table, where everyone has something to lose and everyone has something to gain. Does your community feel that about your library? And if they do, right now, in fact, most of the polls say they do. We need to keep that. In other words, you can't close our library because it will impact professional development and economic and blah, 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 blah. That's what we need to worry about preserving. And we need to worry about preserving, no matter, well taken, the title we have, the position we play, or the place we're in the library. We're all responsible for that ongoing reputation, that ongoing relationship.
Any other?
Okay. I'm sorry. I should let Elliot do this.
No, that's fine. Too, if possible. Now, I understand what you're saying about the future and the idea of a community coming together and the power of language and conversation embedded in that. Originally, when the libraries were started, historically, they started off as, you know, advocates for the community, sources for, you know, political action, so on and so forth. The question is, where do we draw the line? Where is the line led between the community becoming involved in the community and letting the community control us? Meaning, if we were to give the community the option of telling us what books to stock, we'd have 99% DVDs and maybe 1% McNaughton's. where do we draw the line? Where do you see the line between us and them and how we kind of come together?
The answer is going to be, and this is going to be a lame answer, but it's good, which is the community helps determine, right? Oh, great, Dave. Where you are is important. Because if I go to a branch in Philadelphia and I go to a branch in upstate New York and they look and feel exactly the same, I think that's a problem. Now, that said, we need to reflect the community. The other part of a conversation is two-way. I think right now we have too much of a one-way conversation of the library's impression out to the community. And what we need to do is get about 50-50, where that community can do feedback to us. Now we have a board. The board helps us set direction. But if you have boards, I was on a board, I kind of know about librarianship, and I was frightened about the board, right? You know, it's like, oh, we're having trouble number one complaint in Onondaga County Public Library is that the vans don't run often enough to the branches to do the inter-branch delivery, right? That's something that the community can say and we should be able to fix. But if you don't have an ongoing dialogue, the worry is that if you keep bringing in castor oil and making them eat their vegetables, right? Eventually, they're going to give up and go to the place that does cake. So, but the other part of that is everyone needs a little cake in their life, right? So this is a horrible metaphor, and I've destroyed it, so I'll try again. Have you sat down and asked the community what they want? Because my guess is if you do a really interesting conversation, you won't find 90% DVDs. You'll find a lot of people who want DVDs, and you'll find a lot of people who like what you're doing already. In other words, that reputation we were talking about before about saying, can a librarian stand up and go, that's fine, but we also need this, and be taken as a credible voice for that. And I think right now we have that opportunity. If we're constantly seen as someone who's aloof and separate from the community, we will lose the ability. Because who controls the library? It's the community. They win every time. It's called taxes. It's called budgets. It's called, right? If they go to close the library, the librarians don't get to stand up and say, nah. Right?
I just do.
But it only works if like 300 people stand behind the librarian and go, damn straight, right? If you're alone in a if you find yourself digging a hole, step number one, stop digging, right? So the community is ultimately going to be the one you reflect and you're responsible for. But if you're seen as a credible agent where you can stand up and have an important voice that is respected, which right now we have, they'll listen. It's a negotiation. I think right now too often we are worried what the community says, so we don't listen. And I'm talking generalities. I'm sure you guys do. All the time.
I feel very much in unity with the idea of the exchange, of our work as conversation at the exchange. What I'm wondering is, how do we foster that within the staff and within the organization? If our, no matter how good our will towards our patrons, if we don't do some of that same work among ourselves, if the organization is very hierarchical and static, and there's a lot of distrust, that's going to be reflected in our service.
Absolutely.
How would you suggest addressing that?
In 30 words or less. There's a very interesting, I'm going to give a left-handed answer to that. The short answer is, you must constantly communicate and open communication and demand open communication on both ends. And it's a two-ended responsibility. Management must listen, but supervised staff must talk. And fostering an environment which that can happen. I think the number one thing is you need to create test beds. You need to create playgrounds where people feel comfortable. And this is why I say that. This is the left-handed answer. We live in a technological environment where it is very easy now to do things without the infrastructure provided by the organization. So I'm going to give you a technology example, but there are others. The technology examples are, I walk into many settings where librarians say, I want to blog, but the management's going to send me to the committee that's going to devise the you know, policy on it, which is going to take the public revision, which is going to go to the board. And, you know, 12 years later when people go, what's a blog, right? And they're doing video, cell phone, 3D whatevers, and they got to do a policy for 3D whatevers. What librarians can do now is they can go, no problem, LiveJournal. Right? If someone says, ooh, I want a social network, and the management staff says, oh no, because everyone knows that once you put up a social network, the pedophiles come next, right? What they do is say, no problem, Ning.com, and they set one up. And so what happens is, the difference used to be that librarians, when they encountered resistance and innovation within an organization, would get frustrated and ultimately either cave in or leave. And librarians, paraprofessionals, I want to be real clear, open. And now what happens is they hit that wall and they go right around it. And so what happens is all the innovation spread out, and then the issue for management becomes, oh my God, the Free Library of Philadelphia branding, reputation, knowledge is everywhere else but here. Oh my God, someone put something up on YouTube and they identified themselves as the Free Library of Philadelphia. What do we do about that? Right? If we can create safe spaces for everyone to say, let's figure this out by doing, that's important. So our intranets become not just a place to distribute memos and have emails, but a place to host services and try them out and bring some patrons in to try it out too. So I think the short-term answer is to create these safe spaces. The longer-term answer is this pressure to participate exists at the network level, the service level, and exists at the organizational level. This idea that I expect to be able to shape this thing, it happens at the management and staff too. It happens to the point where people say, I can do this stuff real easily without you. Paycheck, kind of hard. But this idea that we need to build up. I mean, when the web started, I can't tell you the number of people who had the same story. I built the perfect website, and then they found it. And who's they? usually a committee or someone with a title after, and the idea is, yeah, but they are just as much impacted by this thing you did in the closet after hours as you are. This needs to be a dialogue. Can we just create a place where every day someone gets the title of chief of innovation and they work on new stuff?